What's up, New York?
What's up?
It's super encouraging to be here. I absolutely love New York. Obviously, it's one of those cities that I've come to quite a bit throughout time. And there's not a lot of places that I go to and I say, man, I could see myself living there. But New York is probably the first place that I've ever gone to. This ain't, this ain't no like kids or nothing like that.
You hear that?
I love Chicago. But this is one of those places that I said, man, I could see myself living
in. Okay.
I think I saw a resume just
dropped. No, I'm happy. I'm happy. We'll jump right in just to give you guys a little bit about us. It sounds like you guys saw the or read the bio. Gave you a little snapshot. This is my family here. This is my wife, Charlene, that you see. My little son, Zane, AJ. That's our oldest. And then, of course, me. Funny enough, you can't get the real image of Zane. And all this glorious hair is glorious mane. The teens like to tease me. They say Zane looks like me if I turn my head upside down. But I didn't braid the beard for y'all today. So, but we're going to talk about what we like to call going there. And I want to give you a couple of disclaimers. Actually, I'm actually pretty encouraged. I didn't know what to expect coming here as far as the numbers. I'm actually glad we got a smaller group because I'm hoping we can get a little bit more intimate in our conversations. I'm actually hoping, I was telling Al and even Desiree and them earlier, it's interesting when you're preaching or coming to do something like this, right? Like if I was a teacher and you told me, hey, teach these guys what's 2 + 2, I'm going to get that right every time. I guarantee you. 2 + 2 = 4, in case you're curious if I'm going to get it right or not. I know that stuff. But when you say come to preach about something, man, it's a whole nother level. Oftentimes, we're up here sharing about something we may be challenged with, something we may be struggling with. This whole concept of urban ministry is so new. I feel like I have just as big of an opportunity to learn from you guys as I am coming to share what we've learned along the way. So I'm excited that we can have more of an intimate talk and more of an intimate conversation. What we mean by going there is that thought of going to the places, doing the things that we normally wouldn't or maybe even feel like we couldn't in order to get a deeper relationship with those people that we may be having. You know, and we're specifically talking about urban ministry, but I want you to think of it on a broader scale. The things we're talking about are really cultural challenges that we face that could be applied to urban ministry just as much as it can be applied to maybe some of our racial challenges or maybe even cultural challenges that go across. I know New York is full of multiple cultures, people from all different parts of the world and the globe, and you're going to interact with those people as well as those cultural differences that can be so and such a smaller level, even from family to family. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And the things that we're talking about, I want you to think beyond urban ministry, even as we talk specifically about how to connect with urban ministries. I also, again, want you to be able to share with me as much as I share with you. I can talk all day, but I want to be able to hear some things from you. So let's start it off. What are some of the challenges you all face here in New York when you think of this whole concept of, man, trying to connect with the urban ministries or the kids that come from those urban areas that are a part of your ministry? What are some things that may come to mind? But I have a couple of things that came to mind, and I want to share them with you. Like was mentioned, I'm sorry, I don't know your name.
Hannah.
Like Hannah mentioned, a lot of these things are familiar to other areas, but the way it tends to hit urban areas is slightly different, and I'll share why. Some of the things I came up with, some of the financial limitations, you know what I mean? Being able to, oftentimes when we're considering things that we want to do, especially those extracurricular activities, even things in ministry, like maybe a lock-in or something like that, you're making decisions not just on spiritual decisions, but you have to make those alongside survival decisions, you know what I mean? Like it means it's not just, am I going to spend my extra cash? It's like, am I going to spend my only cash for this? I think about educational inequalities. One of the challenges with this, too, is sometimes people can confuse this with intellectual inequalities and make the assumption that they're just not capable of understanding something and not considering that there's a limitation. If you don't have access to certain resources and educational systems, then you're going to be limited not only in what you learn, but how you view the world and how you make decisions. and how you're going around doing that. Not only that, but even as those resources start to come into your availability, when you grow up with a mindset that you can only reach a certain goal, sometimes those resources that are available don't even seem real because of this limitation that's been put on you for generation after generation after generation. Family structure, which we already mentioned, the broken homes, the especially from a spiritual standpoint, oftentimes you have one parent that is a disciple, one parent that isn't. I'm sure you guys go through some of the stuff we go through. Sometimes that other parent doesn't even want their kid to have anything to do with the church. And even if they do, if you have one of those homes where kids are constantly going back and forth, it's hard to build. You almost feel like you're battling with these two different worlds at the same time, right? Transportation issues. Yep. You know what I mean? We have, as my wife will talk about, we have a lot of our ministry things a little bit of a distance away from the city. Yep. Well, I know we often talk about the parents have to be the ones responsible. The parents have to be the ones responsible. It's hard to tell the parent who doesn't have a car, you have to be responsible for getting your kid there. Yep. It changes the conversation a little bit. I think about work schedules. We have multiple parents who, man, the successful route was driving trucks or something like that. Or maybe they work third shift or whatever the case may be. And those jobs don't necessarily open up the door for our normal ministry schedules. Yeah. You know what I mean? And we have to figure out ways to help them feel connected without making them feel like they're less spiritual because of it. Yep. Not only that, but a lot of times you live in challenged areas. You know, areas that aren't the same as some of maybe the rest of our ministry. And that plays an effect on everything from, man, how do you talk to these people about the things they're going through? How do you relate to them? To, I mean, honestly, we have to deal with having families that don't even want to go where they live because of fear or insecurities or whatever the case may be. And that plays a part. Not only that, but there's this constant feeling because of some of these other things and how they all overlap each other that you're looked down on by society. Yeah. And so there's this feeling in your heart that somebody's always judging you, somebody's always looking down on you, somebody's always making assumptions about you, who you are, how you think, and all that stuff, simply because of where you come from. Yeah. Now I'm going to show you a challenge that comes up out of this. For a kid, sometimes it feels like no matter where you go, you never really feel like you fit in. Unless you're around people that go through the same stuff as you. You know what I mean? I think one of you guys mentioned that a little bit earlier. Sometimes you question if you fit in anywhere. You feel like you always have to conform to the majority. You know, I was sharing this with Desiree and Ashton. Even for me, oftentimes when we do this, your goal is you want to create these practicals, right? These things that somebody could hear you share, and they can go back and they can say, man, I could do this and this will help and all of that. But there's a part of me that I don't want to say rebels, but has a hard time with that concept because you grew up with this mindset of you always have to fit into a box. And there's a part of me that's like, I don't want to create another box that somebody goes away and says, man, you're supposed to react this way when I do this. When oftentimes with these kids, and we'll share why, they don't often respond well to being put into a box because of the mindset of you've always had to conform. And here's the trickiest part. When you start to feel those things in your church group, the same attitudes, the same feelings that you've had towards society that get perpetuated in the media and in your music can easily be poured out onto, well, this is how the leaders must feel, or this is how the church must feel. And you start to feel like, man, they don't care about me, or I have to be like them in order to fit in. And you start to feel like you'll continue to come, right, because you want to be right with God, but you'll start to feel less and less like you fit in. You know what I mean? Even as we do these lessons, like we've done them in a couple of places now, and we get these completely different, two different spectrums of responses. There's this one mindset of, wow, you know, we're finally talking about this. Oh, I've been waiting for this. These are things that I've been feeling for a while. I'm so encouraged. But then there's this other piece that we get responses from that's like, man, what took so long? Do they even really care? Or is this just another thing that we're doing right now? Is this kind of another box that we're creating? You know what I mean? For the time being. And I'm sharing this not to say that this isn't important. I'm sharing this to say that we have to be prepared for it because those things are real and those things are true, and we have to be able to respond to them.
I was going to just share a quick example that we learned the other day. We're staying with a brother. He's actually moving back to New York. His fiance's here. Girlfriend.
Girlfriend.
Don't be too bad.
I did not say that does not leave this room. Anyway. And so he was sharing with us. So we live on the south side of Chicago. That's the part that is on news most of the time. And what happened, his mom once called Whole Foods and said, the corporate office, and said, hey, how come you don't have a Whole Foods in the south side of Chicago? And they said, we actually don't have Whole Foods in any places that don't have people who go to college.
Wow.
And the reason that is, it is very hard to convince somebody who's educated to eat well. How much more difficult is it to convince somebody who's not? That's the mindset of the world. And that can be brought up into the church. And that's how we, and we only have one. The other day we were looking for a Whole Foods because I needed some fresh juice. And we had to drive, it wasn't far, but it was like only this Mariano's and only this Whole Foods that finally got to the south side, but it's only one this spot. And so it's very amazing that that's how they look at that area of the city, which is about 5 miles from the downtown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that, I mean, she brings up a good point. Imagine you're in this, you're part of this family, right? But you live in a place that even your family doesn't want to come to. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That you may feel judged or whatever because of the way you think, the way you do stuff, the type of music you like to listen to. Whatever the case may be, and you can start to see how easy it can be to start to really project these feelings of the world onto the church as well. And that's where many of our teens exist. One of my favorite stories in talking about urban ministry and just how to connect is the story of Jesus talking to the woman at the well. And I want us to jump into that. I may skip through a little bit just to make some of the points. I'm going to make the assumption that we're fairly familiar with the story. But we'll jump in and out. You said what?
We should be.
Hey. I don't want to make any judgments here right now, right? But let's jump in. And verse 1, John chapter 4, says, now Jesus learned that the Pharisees had heard that he was gaining and baptizing more disciples than John, although in fact it was not Jesus who baptized, but his disciples. So he left Judea and went back once more to Galilee. Now he had to go through Samaria, so he came to a town in Samaria called Sychar, near the plot of ground Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there, and Jesus, tired as he was from the journey, sat down by the well. It was about noon. When a Samaritan woman came to draw water, Jesus said to her, will you give me a drink? His disciples had gone into the town to buy food. Now I want you to think of this, what was going on here. First, you got Jesus associating with people that he shouldn't have associated with, based off of their customs, based off of their traditions, based off of how people think. This is someone that Jesus shouldn't be connecting with. Many ways, similar to some of the challenges we have, all of this was based off of their history. Things that happened long ago dictated that, you know what, these two people aren't supposed to have a great relationship with each other. Some people would even avoid going to Samaria altogether. For whatever, they didn't want to run into the Samaritans. They didn't want to interact with them. I'm assuming I don't have to share all this with you guys. Many of you know this already. You probably taught on it at some point in time or another. Also, Jesus should not have associated with a woman. If you read in verse 27, you know, his disciples saw him there, and even though they didn't say anything about it, the thought came to their minds, why is he talking to this woman? Jesus should have responded like everybody else would. But there's something that Jesus realized, and he was willing to go there and shift the way people might think. One, we have to go to where the people we reach are. We need to reach our. There's something that we miss when we don't go to where people's homes are. We have to build teams. We have to have groups of people that are willing to get past the fears, get past the insecurities, get past whatever it takes so that we can actually get to where these kids are. And I know there's a challenge, right? Like, we get this all the time. We literally have in our ministry right now. And I'll give you an idea of our ministry. We got the Southside kids who, man, their life environments span a whole spectrum. From one kid, I shared about this in Dallas. I'm studying with this kid, and I'm supposed to go meet him for D-time. And his dad calls me up and is like, yeah, be careful, they're shooting outside. Or they were shooting outside. And you know, like I told you guys in Dallas, my first thought was, well, can you drop them off? Let's make this easy for me, you know what I mean? But, you know, you had to go there, you had to be there, you had to meet him. I couldn't just cancel because this was something that he needed. That same kid, funny enough, a little bit later on, he comes into church one day, and he's just sitting. And he was an outgoing, fairly outgoing kid, had a lot of friends in the ministry, but he's just sitting in the corner. And it turns out that his one of his friends had got killed that morning.
Wow.
And he didn't know how to respond. So all he knew is, I'm going to go to church. And it's just, this is the environment he's in. At the same time, we have kids that, I mean, we got one family where I know his dad makes a couple million dollars a year. They live in the heart of downtown. You know what I mean? Really comfortable, really luxurious. That's the spectrum of our ministry. And we have people that I know don't come to Devo simply because they don't want to come into our neighborhood. And that does something to you. You know what I mean? That makes you feel a certain type of way. Yeah. And I'm here. I'm the youth ministry. I'm pouring out grace for everybody. Mm-hmm. Imagine a team who's trying to figure out why these people that are supposed to be our family in Christ don't even want to come visit my house. That does something to them. Mm-hmm. And we need people that are willing to step past the boundaries and willing to say, you know what? I'm not going to let this stop me. And we get this question all the time, and I don't lie to people about the answer. They say, well, is your neighborhood safe? And I tell them, you know, I walk down the block every day. You know, you see me walking to the store. I take my kids to the park. We go hang out and all that stuff. So I feel comfortable. You know what I mean? Now, if you ask me, can something happen? I can't lie to you. It's possible. You know what I mean? There's times where we've heard shooting, not necessarily on our block. One of the houses we stayed at in the last few years, there was actually some shooting right in front of our house. That was the first time it had happened in 10 years, but it happened. Mm-hmm. We hear shooting occasionally in the nearby areas. So I can't guarantee you that nothing can happen. But, you know, at the same time, I feel fairly comfortable. But I feel like even more so, as disciples, we have to be willing to go to those places if we want to reach those people. Yeah. If you don't, there's going to be a place that you never get to. And not just the teens, but anybody's life, if you aren't willing to go there. We can't be afraid or insecure. We have to have more faith than that. We have to appreciate other people's world. And I know this is tricky. You don't have to know someone else's world to appreciate their world. You know what I mean? You don't have to go through what they went through. And I'm not trying to pick on you, but just creating an understanding. Like, you don't have to. In fact, I think it actually helps if you just make it clear, I don't know what you're going through, but I care. Yeah. You know what I mean? We have to be willing to appreciate and get into their world. 1 Corinthians 9:20 is where Paul talks about, man, to the Jews, I became a Jew. To, like, for everybody, he tried to become and understand who they were in order that he might save some of them. Mm-hmm. And we have to be willing to be there. We have to be willing to be different. We can't allow the standards of this world dictate the way we'll be as disciples, whether that's the fears of where we go, the insecurities of who we talk to, even the judgments that we may be tempted to place on people because of where they come from or who they are or their family makeup. We can't allow that stuff to become a part of how we view our kids or anyone as far as that's concerned if we want to connect with them. I'll let Charlene talk.
All right. So going there, for me, I've learned to, like Antoine shared, just not being from Chicago brings up an interesting dynamic. But I'm going to talk about, first of all, how to build the type of team you should build, you're thinking of building, or you're building, or you have. And one of the things that has been really clear to us that you have to, Kurt Emmons and Heidi really emphasized this to us when we first began, is that the quantity does not matter as much as the quality of the person. Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that I love so much about working with Heidi and Kurt is the emphasis on youth and family ministry needs the best of the best. Not, we just put somebody there just to fill up the time. We need to think of who is the best person that we can use for to help with the teen ministry. One of the things that we've done is sometimes we have to work with what we have. Sometimes you have people already there. We're not saying that they're not great disciples, but we have to work with what their strength is. That's something we've started learning to adjust with that. And so, for example, we have two brothers who are working with us in the youth and family, and they're only available a lot of times to give rides, to events, to come and to teen events when they can, to come to meetings when they can because they have school, they have all this other stuff, one is getting married, or they're just not feeling comfortable enough to lead a study at this point or do a devo or whatever the case is. But they have some strengths that we can utilize, and they are consistent in those strengths. Mm-hmm. They're not going to be consistent in every devo, but they're consistent in their inconsistency. And then we have one of the things that we have is the teen girls that we're working with. One of the teen girls actually got baptized a little as we were coming into the youth and family ministry. So I was probably in the last study with her, and then she got baptized. Well, we had a great relationship with her, and she claimed to be our daughter from the time she was in the youth and family teen ministry, and then went on to be in college and graduate. Before she graduated, she was like, I'm moving in, and I am coming to be with the teens. And she lived with us for about a year, and obviously got the benefit of watching kids. So that was great. And she was like, she would have chosen to be in the Young Professionals, which was downtown, which doesn't really work with the youth ministry where we are at. But she chose to be in a ministry where her needs are actually directly met. Now, we make sure that she goes to those events, but her needs are not going to be met in the south where she is at this point. But her heart was like, I'm going to give to the youth and family ministry. I love the teens. And that's somebody who's even helped other young professional girls to come and be part of the youth and family. And we've obviously taken the time to get to know them if they're the best fit. And right now we have just amazing girls who are helping us with that. And so it takes a lot of work to build that. We've been in the youth and family ministry total volunteer and full-time time for about 7 years now. And it's been building steadily. We just now are feeling like we got the volunteers half of what we need. And it's been just like, you know, working on it, you know. We're getting better the other youth and family. Just now is when we can say, okay, we have a youth and family ministry that we're growing. Not just a teen ministry, we got this a few years ago. But we're just now getting to get the young teens and the preteens volunteers. And even that is a lot of work that we have to do. But it's very intentional work where we're considering, hey, who is the right person? We have a couple who are like, okay, they're great in scheduling, but are they great at leading devos? No. So maybe somebody else can come and do devo, but they can organize this and this. So you have to be very aware of your resources and who they are and how they can impact your ministry. The other thing that I also wanted to share about is one of the things that we noticed, and I love this about how Anton's reasons with this, is we've had, when we got married, I got married in Kenya, so when we came here, started volunteering, and the teens were excited that the transitioning time and of us going into volunteering with the youth and family ministry. And at first of all, like, they liked the other couple and they were not so sure about us. They liked Antoine, they were not so sure about me. We have an accent. Anyway, and so eventually, obviously, we enjoyed the lovers and all that. And then when we had kids, when we had our son, I remember one teen came and asked me, so are you going to move to the adults ministry or some campus ministry? And I was like, what? That's not the plan. It's like, no, when people get kids, they move. Mm-hmm. And then we had our second baby, and this is a totally different child, teen. And she came and she was like, a group of them actually, they're like, oh, so you gotta move somewhere else, or, you know? And so there's this culture that we've created in the church. Wow. That youth and family is just another place to pass by. The leaders are just gonna eventually move out. And change will happen, unintentionally and intentionally. But sometimes we have to be considerate of how that impacts kids.
Yep.
And how, honestly, when we first came in, there's this particular group of girls who just did not respond at all to when I would meet, I've tried, and I was like, what is it? And I sat down with one of them, and I said, there's just something I'm not getting. What is just tell that, you know, tell me. And she said, when so-and-so left, that broke my heart. She had given her whole heart to this person. And there was some, how they moved was not very as smooth as they would have wanted. So she didn't have enough time to prepare her for that. Not to anybody's fault, but that actually really dented her to actually this day. And then we had a situation where we had to sit her down. So that even made her even not, you know, want to connect with me. And that's such a loss for us. And so for us, even as ministers, as people who connect with leaders, that's something we need to start thinking is, are we thinking long term? We've asked people to come work with us. There's this couple that we love so much. And we're like, hey, can you consider coming and working with the young teens? And they were like, oh, we can do it for 6 months. And we're like, let's start thinking about it from a long-term perspective. I remember people thinking, how about thinking about this as a career? Youth and family as a career. Because if we don't consider that long-term, then we're not trusted as a church. Yeah. We're not trusted as a leadership. Again, not to remove the fact that that change might happen, but to consider that before we do that, that we consider just the same way we put a lot of work on campus ministry and making it a solid, you know, there's no question about our campus ministries. This, we love it. You know, I love being in campus ministry. I think when we as kids feel secure of who we are in leadership, they will own the church. They will feel like this is my church. This is not mommy and daddy's church. And so that's something that I've seen. Can work it out with your set up, but that's something that we've seen that's a need for us. Now, personally, when it came to going there, like Antoine shared, it's been very challenging considering staying in the south side of Chicago, because, especially as we've had kids, I can tend to be naive being in America, coming from Nairobi, because it's called, actually, the nickname for Nairobi is Nairobery. Because you will get robbed in your lifetime a couple of times, you know. But the kind of crime is different. We're not talking about getting shot when you're just minding your own business. Like, the people who've been shot in their houses, you know, and not just one random situation. It happens a lot. Or, I mean, there's kids who witness people getting shot. So it does get me to that point of worry and scare. And so a lot of times I'll come to and I'm like, should we move to the suburbs? So, you know, what are we doing here? Are we doing the right thing? And obviously I've had to battle this with God and with myself, my fears and insecurities. But then for me, I think what has been a conviction is when I've had the teens and the people that I've had in my relationship. One of the teens I remember, we built, when I first came, I was only concerned about, because I really didn't want to work in youth and family or teen ministry. I was a teen. I was like, good luck to whoever works with the teens. You guys, I was one of them, one of, you know. And so when I first came and he said, oh, we think you're going to the ministry, I'm like, do not share that with anybody because I'm going to the ministry. I don't want to, you know. But, and I was very intimidated by the U.S. kids, I'm sorry. But I was intimidated. And I remember taking the bus and they would come from school and I'm like, I'm going to be on that corner of the adult, you know, because they are flamboyant, loud, and, you know, and I'm like, wow, that's a lot. And I was very intimidated by that. And so even in church, so I'd reach out to this girl and I'd go and say hi every Sunday. Hi! And she'd be like, huh. And it was probably a year. And she just did nothing. She was giving me nothing. And I was like, the insecurities started coming in and excuses started coming in. But I was like, without fail, hi, her sisters. And every time I would say hi. And then finally she broke through and we would go hang out and talk. And she was in an intense family situation. Like, it's crazy. Like, I remember one time she called me and she was in an elevator with her boyfriend and the elevator opened and there was shooting. Oof. Shot her boyfriend. She hid and she they didn't see her. So she shot up the boyfriend. She was just left there with I can't remember if he passed away. I don't think he died. He did. And she called me, and I was like, it's devastating. Mm-hmm. That's just one of the many devastating. I mean, the trauma that that girl has gone through is incredible. And that's just one of the few that you hear about. And when I hear that, pulls me to be like, there's a reason why I should stay here. This is not my home. I'm not giving, back to my home, but I'm giving to these hearts. If I see this girl, I mean, she never became a disciple, but to this day, she moved to another state. When she comes home, we hang out. She totally lives a different kind of life that, it's very different, but we have that connection and that relationship. Where before she moved to her state, there was an incident, and the lady who was leading the ministry then had to call DCFS because there was, just stuff that needed to be dealt with, and it was devastating on the family. It was just, obviously, there's never an easy way of calling, the state, and even being with her through that, and for me, it is night and day. There's nothing like that in Kenya. I was like, I'm so glad I didn't have to call the DCFS. Now, I'm probably better equipped now, but I'm like, oh God, I'm so glad I didn't have to do that. But I was so glad to be there and see the mess and be in the mess and still be her friend and to go there to a place where I don't have to, but I want to. Amen. So I think that's the attitude we should have going there.
And I'll say this just to add to Charlene, what she was saying. Oh, you can clap. The more you can help the kids see that you're not just there as a ministry leader, but you're there because you care about a relationship, right? The more you'll be able to break down some of those walls. And this won't happen overnight. We're talking about a lifetime of feeling like nobody really cares for you or nobody is really thinking about you. You know what I mean? You're not going to come in one day and say, hey, I just want to be your friend, and all of a sudden it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. But what's amazing is we start reaching out to our kids as soon as they're born. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Now I'm hanging out with preteens, young teens, or whatever the case may be. So when they get to the teens, we'll have a relationship established. Yeah. And I tell them, one of the first things I tell all my guys, girls, whole nine yards is, we're not just doing this because we're in a ministry. We're doing this because we care about you. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? We're doing this because we care about you. That girl called Charlene at like 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning because she didn't know who else to talk to. Mm-hmm. But she knew Charlene cared about her. You know what I mean? And that's what makes a difference, I think, in the world of urban ministry, is showing somebody that you care about them. Mm-hmm. We'll continue on in verse 9. It says, a Samaritan woman said to him, you are a Jew and I am a Samaritan woman. How can you ask for a drink? For Jews do not associate with Samaritans. Jesus answered her, if you knew the gift of God and who it is that asks you for a drink, you would have asked him and he would have given you living water. Sir, the woman said, you have nothing to draw with and the well is deep. Where can you get this living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us the well and drank from it himself, as did also his sons and his livestock? Jesus answered, everyone who drinks his water will be thirsty again, but whoever drinks the water I give them will never thirst. Indeed, the water I give them will become in them a spring of water welling up to eternal life. You know, there's places that we generally wouldn't go. And you think about, I think about when I read this, for that woman, how do you think she knew Jesus was Jewish? What are some of the things that you think might have gave her that impression? He's in Samaria, a place where Jewish people wouldn't want to be at. What do you think made him stand out? Yeah.
Probably like his speech or his appearance.
Okay, maybe his speech, maybe his accent or something like that. Yeah.
The clothes he wore.
The clothes he wore, yeah. Any other thoughts? What's that?
He had a halo. I'm kidding.
Oh, right. Right. Right, there's something different about him.
Maybe where he was coming from.
Okay, maybe where he was coming from. Maybe she's like, man, you don't look familiar. I don't see you around here. There's something different about you. You know what I mean? And the reality is, I don't know. I'm not 100% sure. But there was something right here. I don't know. Maybe people usually say he had the little curly things. I don't know if they rocked those back then. I don't know. But we know that she knew. And you can tell that Jesus embraced his culture. He wasn't ashamed of who he was. He wasn't ashamed of where he came from. For whatever reason, she was able to easily tell without, you know, even much going on in the conversation that he was Jewish. And he doesn't seem to be hiding that in any way. But that didn't stop him from embracing her. That didn't stop him from reaching out to her. You know what I mean? Jesus listens to every single statement she makes. He never goes to, and I'm going to get a little specific on some of the challenges we had. You know, I think sometimes we can make certain assumptions about different people. Like, realistically, a lot of times kids from urban ministries are louder, are more aggressive. You know what I mean? And we start to even want to disciple that behavior, like, hey, you're being too rough. You're being too disruptive. You know what I mean? When really that's just a part of their culture. I know from the Black community, we can make the mistake of oftentimes jumping to the conclusion that because somebody did or said something, that they must be racist. Or they must not care about Black people. When realistically, there could be just limitations in what they understand from their culture. You know, I'll tell you a story about when I was growing up. I lived in Chicago the majority of my life, but there was a period where the neighborhood we grew up in was getting really bad. Me personally, I was getting into fights like every day for random reasons. So my mom, my aunt, and my grandmother and grandfather moved everybody to a house in the suburbs, 10 of us living in the same house. And honestly, a completely white suburb. We were the only Black family in that suburb. And it was at the point where many of them didn't want us to be there. I mean, we had people writing stuff on our fence, throwing stuff at our house. I got followed a couple of times, people yelling stuff. It got so bad that the police literally came, and they knew my uncle, who lived in the house with us, was a Cook County sheriff. They said, at this point, if anybody does something and you shoot them, we'll call it self-defense.
Wow.
Because it had gotten that bad.
Wow.
Here's what's interesting. There's a time I had made relationships with a lot of the kids, though, right? So we're out, we're playing football, and then one of the kids gets tackled. And, you know, there's this time period where when you play, if you play football anywhere, any neighborhood, where it's like everybody is about to jump on them. And they yell out, one of the kids yells out the N-word and says, pile. You know what I mean? And so they all run and jump. And I'm just standing there like, I know this didn't just happen. You know what I mean? So they all, they kind of did their whole little thing. Then they notice that I'm standing off to the side. And now their eyes are starting to light up, right? And there's two ways we can approach this, right? And I'm thinking, okay, there's like 11 of them, 12 of me. I mean, 12 of them, one of me. Fighting is not the answer today, right? Fighting is not the answer. You mature a lot when you're placed in certain situations. And I'm from the South Side. I don't get scared very easy, I don't think, but I'm not stupid. So I'm like, okay, we got to figure out a different way to resolve this issue. The other piece to it is, though, these were my friends. Some of these guys, I had spent the night over their house. I was over their house for dinner. I had no reason to believe either one of them was racist. So it was easy for me to comprehend that whether that was an appropriate thing to say or not, they didn't have any ill intent. You know what I mean? And, you know, I really honestly believe, especially as an adult thinking about it, I'm sure that maybe these guys heard that from one of their older siblings or their dad or something, and they were just doing what they knew. Funny enough, they were like, oh, I'm sure you guys probably say cracker pile. I was like, no, we say doggy pile. And they're just like, oh, I'm sorry. But I think it's harder for us to do that to people we don't know. And recognize that a lot of times, this is my personal opinion. Many people disagree with me, but this is what I honestly believe. I don't think the things that we normally consider racist are quite the same as they would have been many decades ago. I think many of the issues we see is more lack of intelligence on how other cultures, other people think than it is my intent is to be offensive. I'm not saying that it doesn't happen. I think you would be ignorant to think that. But I don't think the majority of it is what we generally assume it is. But it's only when we're willing to consider somebody else's culture consider where someone else is coming from, without letting go of where we're coming from, that we start to see those things. He allows the woman to be free to share what's going on and what she feels. He lets her say, you shouldn't be talking to me. And he doesn't attack her and say, you Samaritan, what are you doing? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He allows her to do that.
Yeah.
And he talks through it with her. He says, man, not only do I want to talk to you, but I want to have a relationship with you. I want to give you something greater than what I'm asking from you because I care about you. Yeah. I think about this with one of my teens, and I'll get into it in just a second. But for us, we have to help people to get a voice. You know what I mean? We have to help people to be able to share those things that they wouldn't normally feel comfortable sharing.
Wow.
We have to help people to let off those things that even that they're offended by, that maybe they may feel like this is one of those times that I just have to conform. But what they really need to feel accepted, to feel like, man, you know what? This really is my ministry, is to be able to share those things and feel like they're being heard. We have to care about what they have to say, even if we don't agree with it or like it. Jesus didn't agree with everything she said. And in some cases, and we'll see this in a second, and you probably already know it, he even corrects or explains to her what she's saying actually means. But he absolutely listened to it and responded to every single phrase. We have to be willing to share what we feel. We have to be willing to be open with where we are at, whether we're right or wrong, and work through it even with our teens. You know what I mean? I know we sometimes, a big thing that happens with us is the whole thing with music. And initially with the teens, like your first response is, man, y'all music is evil. It's full of vulgarness and all that different stuff, right? Like the 90s, 80s music that I listened to was way better, right? But this is how I started to interact with them, because I had a group of boys that just wouldn't pay attention to me for nothing. But I would drive them places and I would hear them all the time talking about music. So I decided, man, you know what? I want y'all to give me y'all favorite artists. Tell me their best song and I'm going to listen to it. No judgments on the language, no judgments on, you know, the content. I just want to listen to it. And, you know, for weeks on end, I would listen to their music and come back and just tell them what I felt about it. Like, this dude is horrible. This dude is all right. He got flow, he got skills or whatever, whatever. This dude is bad. And we started talking about it. Then I would share music with them, you know. But after I had heard their music, it was just honest and real with what I felt about it. They respected it. And then they listened to some of the music I shared. And they didn't care about most of it. They still don't realize Tupac and Biggie is way better than anybody they listen to now. They still don't get it, you know what I mean? But we start having these conversations, you know, and it started to help them feel like, wow, you know what? We're not going to be judged, but we can be who we are. Yes. Funny enough, one more quick story, and I'm going to kind of push through it because of time. We had some of our teens, these are teen disciples. We're at this congregational event, right? And I see them standing off to the corner, not really talking to anybody. So I pull them to the side afterwards. I'm like, man, what was up? Y'all was sitting there just talking, just hanging out with yourselves. All these people you have an opportunity to meet. And they responded, man, when we come to these events, we got two choices. Their words, not mine. So it was like, we can either sit by ourselves or we can act white so we can fit in. Mm-hmm. And they was like, and we don't feel like acting white today. So we didn't talk. So I was like, man, I'm going to be real with y'all. One, you have to learn how to interact with other people.
Yep.
These are the people that are going to be in your campus ministries. These are the people that, realistically, if you graduate from college, which I hope you will, that you're going to be working with, that you're going to be interacting with, the people that you're going to be reaching out to. And I told them, I'm going to tell you the other thing, too, 100% true. You absolutely need to be yourself. You shouldn't change for anybody.
Yeah, right.
Because these people need to know how to interact with people like you,
right,
if they're going to be effective on campuses or in the future, wherever they go to. One day, they're going to reach out to somebody like you. And if you aren't real with who you are, they won't know how to interact with you. So some time goes on. I actually forgot that we had this conversation. We had some other congregational events over this last past summer. We just sitting, three or four of us just hanging out. And they start laughing over something. I'm like, what's so funny? They're like, oh, wait, we didn't tell you about this? I'm like, nah, what happened? They tell me at the next congregational event, they're sitting there and they're like, okay, we're going to talk to people. So they in this group of campus kids, and they start talking about Fortnite. One girl goes, "What's Fortnite? I never heard of it." One of our teams goes, "Oh, that's my drug." So the girl starts to like step back and get a little nervous. And one of the other teams was like, wait, he's not on drugs. Let me explain to you what that means. But what's important about that is they were learning to one, be outgoing, to reach out, to interact, but to still be themselves. Now they're learning a lesson on how to interact. You know what I mean? And she learned what Fortnite was. And then he's not on drugs. You know what I mean? We have to help people determine what was right and what wasn't. Yeah. In Galatians 5, Paul was going to show that, man, you don't have to be circumcised. And this is important because oftentimes when these kids get looked at, there's automatic assumptions on who they are and where they are and what kind of stuff they're into. And even as they do certain things, oftentimes these cultural things that we're comfortable with, even our own church traditions, can come off as this is what's righteous and what's not. And we have to help people to break down those walls and not to judge them. We have to protect the kids that we're trying to help get connected. Equally speaking, we have to allow people to make mistakes and help them to understand the challenges that other people have. Like that one teen helped to help the girl understand that he wasn't on drugs, but at the same time help him realize, hey, you can't be telling everybody about drugs. Some of them not ready for that, you know what I mean? But it's a communication that has to happen. In Acts 16, Paul actually asked Timothy to get circumcised so that they can be able to have certain conversations that they wouldn't be able to have if he wasn't, even though Paul knew circumcision wasn't necessary. Yeah. And we have to be willing to help navigate these conversations. One quick example, and I know we're running short on time, but I'm rush. We good? Okay. One quick thing was we had. Oh my gosh! Now my mind is losing me. We'll get back to that later.
Jump in whenever.
Yeah. I'll tell you.
Yeah. Gonna talk a little bit about. How you guys feeling, first of all? Great. You need to do an icebreaker, please?
That's the icebreaker. Yeah.
So I just thought about, I heard a quote the other day that young people, teens or young people, do not often remember what you say, but they remember how they felt about what you said or how you interact with them. This is very key because, I mean, how many devos and exciting things have you done that you felt like, man, that lesson was powerful? Mm-hmm. But what they connect with is how you interact and how they feel about you. Yeah. So what does that mean? It's a lot of what Antoine has said in this slide. So mine is going to be mumbo jumbled in there. And so one of the things that I feel like has been really crucial for us is kind of like Paul. It's kind of meeting people. Their need, looking at their needs, not just the spiritual and the spiritual, but also their needs. Sometimes, remember that this girl that I've been studying with her from day one when she came to the team ministry for 4 years, met her, came to my house, and you know, every day, every week after school, sometimes she'd be like, "Can I just come twice a week?" And honestly, we were barely studying the Bible because I was just trying to help her have some kind of sanity. You know, her mom would come to church. She wasn't a disciple at that point, but had been in the church since she was 19, but just was a very unhealthy dynamic. And she would come to my house, and when she came in, she, depending on the day, she would come and have something for her to eat, because I know she probably ate at 11 o'clock in the morning. Then she would come and she would be like, "Oh, how are you feeling today?" I'm like, she's like always tired, so she would take a nap. And then she would do her little things or be on, or just go and have her time or whatever. A lot of times she would take a nap and then she would either wake up and have another snack and probably, hopefully, would have about 30 minutes of talking and catching up and having a Bible study. And that happened for 4 years. And she did not. Yeah.
4 years. 2 meals.
Not everybody.
We got you, Al. You come, we got you.
And so for us, it's creating that safe space. I remember when we first started in the youth family, we had a tiny little house that Antoine had, and it was ample enough for two people. It was just max. Even we couldn't have our kids in that house. It was really tiny. We could, but you know. But I remember when he was like, for us at that point, even if we didn't have to deal with parents, all we needed to do is as a safe place for the teens, because our ministry, the dynamics was just so urban ministry. It's like somebody got shot, their parents, this person is in jail. That's the stuff they're dealing with. And if our home just became the place where they just came to just feel safe, feel at ease, eat something, and just feel not worried about anything else that happened in school, that happened in life, that's going to happen tomorrow, that's a safe place for us. And that's, I think, for us, and thanks to Antoine for that mindset, because I'm like, well, so you need to be picked up again. You know, that really is, you know. But I've come to have that almost relaxed. I have my space that I can have, you know, pulled away, but opening my home enough to be able to say, obviously, you still can be you. You don't have to feel like that's not your thing. You know, you can work it out. But it's also having that mentality that I'm going to create a safe space for this person because I know their story. Mm-hmm. I know what's behind this. I know I can look at their needs and say there's much more than let's open the Bible.
Right.
And still open the Bible. You know what I mean? The other thing is also... Oh, okay. It's also realizing that there's... I'm sorry. Just messed up a little bit. Okay. Yeah. I'm sorry.
You're good.
Oh, yeah. So the other thing that we also notice is our ministry, on average, every year we have about 40 kids on paper. So it's not very big for the two groups. It's two in one. So the downtown doesn't have a lot of kids because there's a lot of young professionals. There's a lot of revolving doors. But on the south side, we have a lot of kids. And so we have the majority of the teens there. And so what sometimes would happen, especially when it began, we only had one teen disciple girl, you know, and they probably had that's the most they had had in many years. And so it kind of can be discouraging when you have devos on Fridays and then we change them to Saturdays and there's games and they have all these schedules and you'll go like, okay, it's 7 o'clock. Oh, it's 5 o'clock and okay, let's see how this goes. And your team workers come and one person comes and you're like, what's going to happen today? You know? And one of the things that we are learning even now is whoever comes, we're going to make a party out of it.
Yeah.
It is not a, oh my gosh, where's the rest of it? And I've said that before. I was like, what happened to your friends? Like, let's go, you know, but kind of giving them like, you're here,
amen,
we're going to make it great.
Amen.
You matter.
Amen.
You are as amazing as the 50 people.
Amen.
You are as amazing as the one other person, you know.
Amen.
And obviously you have to be creative when those moments come. I remember those times when we have like set up, like we are all there. And we had a recently, I think there was a holiday or something. And so we were like, we don't know who's coming. And the other youth leaders who help us had come up with these games and stuff. And then we're like, okay, there's just two people. I think it was less than five. And we're like, forget about the game. Forget about the whole thing. And they did something totally different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
right.
So you have to be creative in that sense.
Yeah.
Excuse me. And kind of adjust to the needs as they come, you know. The other thing that I've seen in terms of like really connecting and thinking about the needs of the teens. This is something... that I've seen often. I don't know if you've noticed it. So let's say after church, we're having a conversation. Normally, my thought process is like, where's the teen? Whereas we're singing, I'm nowhere. I'm kind of scoping where they are, right? And so after church, I might be even talking to a young teen or talking to a teen. Maybe we don't have a huddle or whatever the case is. And so what happens is most of the time, there's just an adult who wants been wanting to catch up with you, right?
Yeah.
And they come and I'm talking to... Manami,
yeah.
And I'm like talking and I'm engaging and the adults come,
mm-hmm,
and you get completely sidetracked. Can you imagine? Let's actually do it, Antoine and Manami.
Okay.
So you're gonna come in and interrupt. And
I guess
so
we're
talking. Hey, how was your week?
Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So just imagine you're Manami at this mall. What is that telling you?
Not important.
Thank you. You're not important. You're not valuable. everything. And you're not, this conversation doesn't really matter. I need to move on to this. And sometimes when I've noticed that, and I'm like caught up in this, I'd actually, most of the times I'll say, give me 5 minutes, let me finish with, you know, because I need to also show them that she's important to me. This is my ministry right now. You know, this is important to me and it's important to her. But sometimes I'd even hold her hand and say, no, I'm with you. Let me talk to her and I'll be, get back to you. This is the most important. And we need to, I think sometimes we do that with our kids. When we're having somebody over, we don't care about not meeting their needs for that moment. Even if it's just holding them for a second, it's like, you okay? Okay, baby. All right. They need just that 2 minutes to feel like you're good. And then they can move on. We're just dealing with a little older kids, you know? And obviously, that's important to them. And I think for us, we have to be so intentional. And that way, we'll start creating a culture that these youths are not just passing by. This is important to our church.
Amen.
That we're investing in those who are going to be sitting right here next year and leading the church. Because a lot of times, I think, and I don't know, I grew up in the church. I'm sorry, that's my... I grew up in the church, and it's easy to feel like a second-class citizen. And so a lot of times, what I really valued, like I had... My mom was a single mom at some point as a disciple with me, and then she got married to my dad, who's a great disciple, when I was 15. Around that time, I had a lot of big brothers. I love to have big brothers. There was a fantasy of mine to have a big brother, which I actually came to find out I did have a big brother, who we're 2 weeks apart. Yeah. So, and so it was really cool because those, I remember this guy when I had a really challenging teen years and struggling with this whole thing of my mom getting married and me finding my identity and all that. And I was actually physically going to look for my dad by myself. And big brother, his name is Faris, he's actually, was he baptized? No, he was baptized in Boston. But, you know, big brother Faris was like, what is going on? And he stepped in and he said, I'll do whatever it takes to help you. And he was the gap between talking about my situation with my mom, because we were fine, but we were in this situation. I just felt like I could not talk to her because I had caused some others, you know. And so she was a gap, and he was able to help me, and eventually we contacted my dad. He didn't want anything to do with me. That's a whole other story. But that was somebody that I knew to this day. That's my big brother. No question about that. And we need to, that's the invest. And I know you guys are doing these things, but that's the investment that we need, the culture of the church needs to feel, and their kids need to feel that they're that valued, and that we're willing to really go there, and that their voice matters. And it's so important, because just like my child who pulls me and is like, mommy, 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 our kids, teens are saying the same thing. Big brother, help. Not in words, but in action.
We're about to wrap it up real quick here. She's going to say one more piece for us. One lesson we learned when we were getting married, we had a really unique situation where she was in Kenya. I was here in the U.S. We were trying to figure out this dynamic between the different cultures. And one of the things somebody shared with us that was super impactful and help us to understand the situation and put things in perspective was just this whole idea of you have to allow people to make mistakes. And remember that none of us are perfect. We're all trying to figure it out. You have to be capable of letting people make mistakes. Equally, you have to let yourselves make mistakes. Yeah. When we first came in the youth and family, we came, we sat down, we was like, look, we have our 1 year plan. And we were ready to go after it. We got to change this ministry in 1 year. Like 3-4 months later, we came to that same group. He was like, hey, we got our 10-year plan. Same exact thing. We was like, man, this is going to take more work. And it's been ups and downs. We figured it out. But we realized we had to give ourselves room to make mistakes. Real quick, verse 19. It says, sir, the woman said, I can see that you're a prophet. Our ancestors worshipped on this mountain, but you Jews claim that the place where we must worship is in Jerusalem. And as you know, this is where her and Jesus have this back and forth about how they worship differently. And she felt like, man, almost like they were being judged because of the way they worship. Here's what Jesus says a little bit later on. He says, you Samaritans worship what you do not know. We worship what we do know, for salvation is from the Jews. Yet a time is coming and has now come when the true worshipers will worship the Father in the spirit and in truth. For they are the kind of worshipers the Father seeks. You know, one of the trickiest pieces is going to this place where we couldn't. And this is having those conversations, being willing to talk about those things that are the areas that we generally feel like, man, I'm not allowed to talk about those things. We have to be willing to bring these things up. Charlene teases me all the time. She's like, you always bring up the awkward things. You know what I mean? And it's those things that you sit down in the room, somebody says something, somebody does something. Everybody is thinking the same thing, but nobody wants to be the one to say it. You know what I mean? But we have to be comfortable talking about those things. Jesus accepts the truths about his people. Oftentimes what happens in these conversations is, you know, we feel like if I say what's really going on, it might make me look bad, so I don't want to say it. You know what I mean? I think about some of the things we talk about the most is these conversations where, honestly, the issues between what goes on between blacks and whites or whatever the case may be. You know, for example, a policeman shoots somebody. You know, the black people never want to say, yeah, he might have been doing something wrong. He had drugs on him. We all know it, but we don't want to talk about it. You know what I mean? There may be some situations where the police officer actually did the right thing. Right. You know what I mean? It's almost like the white person doesn't want to say, man, yeah, my people sometimes do bad things. Or, you know, slavery actually was a horrible thing. Or some of these things are bad. But one of the things that Jesus shows us, we have to be willing to, let's call it the truth what it is. Mm-hmm. Let's deal with it. You know what I mean? Let's talk about it. Otherwise, we won't get past certain walls. We'll always bump heads at these one places. But he also goes after knowing the truths about her people. And he doesn't cut corners on those things either. You know what I mean? He absolutely says, yeah, you're right. You know, we do say that. But this is the reason why. This is what you know. And what's most important, and this is why the truth, dealing with these truths is important, because our goal has to be the same thing that Jesus wanted. And what God desires is that all of us will come together in the end. Right. You know what I mean? But if we don't allow ourselves to share those truths, if we don't allow ourselves to talk about these awkward things, we'll never get to that point. You know what I mean? One of the examples I shared last time we did this, Charlene was like, you have to share this example. Well, big issue that comes up all the time is for like black women when somebody touches their hair. And his mindset is always, oh, what I see the most, I'm not going to say everybody does this, it's kind of like, oh, they just get irritated, they just get upset. But I hear this all the time, like, I don't want to be the one to tell them why that's wrong. And so you hold something in your heart towards that person. They can't figure out why you got an attitude. So they start to think black people just have attitudes. You thinking white people are just racist. As opposed to saying, and then when they say, I don't want to be the one to teach them, I oftentimes respond like, well, are they going to go to like the community college class on what offends black people? Because if they did, they don't have one. But if they did, the first thing we would say is, they don't even know what offends us to begin with. Because the offense is probably going to be some white person that tell people what offends black people. But we have to be willing to have those awkward conversations if we ever going to get past some of these awkward moments. We don't have to be that person. We don't have to get it. But we have to be willing to have these conversations. I'm going to skip through a little bit real quick because I want to share this story that some of you heard in Dallas. But to me, this is the heart of it. This came from our camp 2018. We were planning a camp, Trust, and we're getting ready for one of our meetings. And Kurt Ammon sends out this symbol. He's like, man, we found the design for our Trust camp. We found the design for our Trust camp. And I think he even put it on. Did he send it just to the Midwest, or did you guys see it too? I can't remember. This doesn't look familiar.
I didn't see it ahead of that, but okay. I've
seen this. Yeah. So he said that it must have been just to the Midwest leaders. But either way, man, some group me that I had started getting all these responses. Oh, that's awesome. That's amazing. Oh, we love it. So then we get to our meeting, and the people that are in our Youth and Family Leadership Group. Oh my gosh, Kurt, we absolutely love that symbol. You guys nailed it. Then Kurt looks at me and he's like, Antoine, how do you feel about this symbol? And I don't know if he saw something on my face or what. I didn't say it was amazing, but I'm like, I responded to him. I said, Kurt, do you want me to tell you the truth? And now this is one of those, sometimes people ask questions for the person that they're asking. I knew what Kurt was going to say. But I wanted everybody else to know and get ready for it. I'm about to tell them the truth. So Kurt was like, yeah, absolutely. I want you to tell me the truth. And I said, Kurt, I'm going to be honest with you. This looks like the symbol for a yacht club that I'm not allowed to go to. Mm-hmm. And I started to explain to him, even for us on the south side, like we have the lakefront, the Lakeshore Drive. You've probably heard of it. Goes clear across the south side. Well, they've taken the lake away and started building all these little boat things, yacht areas, that honestly, we can't even get it. I don't have the money to go into one of those things. You know what I mean? They're taking the parks, the basketball courts, and they're turning it into this. And even the beach area that's there, the place we used to be able to go for free, now we have to pay to park because all these yacht clubs are there. So they want to, you know, save the parking or whatever. So I was like, so for me, while I don't have the symbol itself, it's a cute picture. I'm cool with it. It kind of rubs me the wrong way. You know what I mean? Kurt's immediate response was, then we won't use it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? He's like, period, we won't use it. We'll figure out something else. And to me, that was super encouraging because what it said is, I matter. Even if he had to say, wow, man, I'm sorry to hear that. We got this image. This kind of what we already said we would go with. I honestly would have been okay. It's honestly not a bad picture. The majority of our church would have been good. But he made it clear to say that, man, you matter. The people that you serve in your ministry matter. We're going to make a different image. So we started working on these designs and all this. I'll show you what we came up with. After going through multiple different designs, we changed the background. And I was like, you know, that actually looked kind of dope. And what's funny is we had people from our ministry wanting to buy the t-shirts, wanting to buy the stuff. It looked nice in black, and it didn't feel offensive. You know what I mean? But it's that whole idea of, man, and in honesty, it came from Kurt. Yeah, it came from Kurt saying, look, I want to give you a voice. I want to let you know that I think you're important. Similar to how Jesus said to that Samaritan woman, look, I care about you. Yeah. I want to hear what you have to say, but I want you to know the truth, but I care about you. And I think that's the heart of working with urban ministry, because you're working with a people who, for their lives, right, the world outside their immediate area, and sometimes even within their immediate area, says that I don't really care about you.
Yeah.
That's the feeling that you get. You're not as important as the other neighborhood, even at church. You know what I mean? You're in an area we don't feel comfortable going to. You're not the priority right now. And we have to help them to see that they matter. And if you do that, you'll go way farther than trying to figure out the perfect Bible study, trying to figure out, like, what Jesus cared about was their hearts.
Right.
And once you get their hearts, you'll be able to help them to be able to understand what the love of Jesus is really about even more.
Right.
But ultimately, we have to be willing to go there to do it. Yeah. That's our lesson. That's our